The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
A couple of weeks ago, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, advised all Irish citizens to leave Ethiopia. Their safety could not be guaranteed. The threat of a genocide against Tigrayan civilians in Ethiopia is mounting, and that's the reason for Simon Coveney's concern. I'm joined now by former head of the UN Developmental Programme and former Prime Minister of New Zealand, Helen Clark, to talk about what's happening in Ethiopia. Helen, good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, it seems to have kind of slowly emerged onto the world a consciousness about what's going on in Ethiopia, but this is not an overnight development.
No, this conflict's been going since November last year, and there'll be dispute about why and how it began, but the long and short of it is that Eritrean forces came over the border in Tigray, and the Ethiopian armed forces came in from the south. Now, very early on, the Ethiopians had actually put into detention 15,000 Tigrayan members of the military. So they took them out, presumably, of course, knowing they wouldn't want to fight against their kinspeople in Tigray. So a horrible conflict began pretty much under the radar. The Ethiopians started to experience some pushback, and eventually the Tigrayan forces retook the regional capital of Mekelle. But then they didn't stop there. They started pushing south into the Amhara and Afar regions. And it looks like, you know, these very much contested regions now, with some pushback again by the Ethiopian forces. But let's cut to the chase here. 2 million people are displaced by this conflict. There's hundreds of thousands in famine-like conditions. The UN says it's 1.3 billion short in trying to fund humanitarian needs in Ethiopia. And that's not just in Tigray. There's also very severe drought that's hit the Somali region and the Oromia region. So things are going pretty badly all up in Ethiopia at the moment.
What is the essence of the argument? I mean, the Tigrayan people number, what, about 7 million or thereabouts? The population
about
of Ethiopia is...
The population of Ethiopia
is 120 million.
Yeah,
so you have a huge disparity in populations. Mm. What are they saying about the Tigrayan people? Are they treating them as some sort of backward race?
Well, one of the issues is the hate speech against Tigrayans. You know, they've been called the most dreadful things, you know, sort of rats. And, you know, there's really been rhetoric that, you know, would sort of be a sign of genocide, actually, a lot of hate speech. But if you go back to the roots of this, when the dictatorship in Ethiopia was chased out, you know, some 30 years ago, it was the Tigrayan part of the overall Liberation Front movement that gained the most power. And they had a long-serving leader called Meles Zenawi. And the Tigrayans really ran at us. And there was always a lot of resentment about that. Now, when this current prime minister came to power, he got rid of a lot of senior Tigrayans. So the Tigrayans kind of retreated home and then weren't happy at what they saw as his attempts to sort of centralize rather than federalize. So it really came down to, you know, the amount of autonomy that a region could have. And they ran their own regional elections, which weren't recognized. And then it all spun out from there. So it has been dreadful. I've been tweeting for quite a lot of the past year about the level of rape of women in conflict, the extrajudicial killings by Eritrean and Ethiopian forces, the use of denial of food as a weapon of war. It's been very difficult for the UN and other agencies to get food into Tigray. So it is a desperate and sad situation.
Yeah. When you talk about the Tigrayans kind of running Addis Ababa before this and then being removed, it reminds me of the Hutu and Tutsi situation in Rwanda, which led to a genocide. I mean, are we in danger of going down that road and the world effectively, as it did in the UN, in Bosnia and again in Rwanda, standing idly by?
Well, this is the worry, and the op-ed that I wrote with two others that appeared in The Guardian a few days ago said we saw five signs of genocide. You know, one was the level of the hate speech, which is pretty awful. A second was the very large number of detentions of Tigrayans, you know, targeted for detention. I mentioned the 15,000 military who've been in poor conditions in detention for over a year now. There's been about 30,000 Tigrayans rounded up in Addis for no particular reason other than the Tigrayan, and many others in other regions of the country as well. Then you've seen the government mobilize ethnic-based militias and vigilantes as part of its campaign against Tigrayans. You've seen no media access to Tigray. And as I say, no humanitarian access either. And a lot of intimidation of journalists, both local journalists and foreign journalists. And then you've got a divided international community, you know, where it's been very difficult to get anything out of the Security Council to try and stop the flow of arms to Ethiopia. Because if you know, people can purchase arms, that just fuels the conflict and keeps it going. So, yeah, the African Union, of course, is hosted by Ethiopia. It has its headquarters in Addis, so it's been in a difficult position. There just hasn't been sufficient international and regional political will to call out both sides to the conflict and say you have to negotiate some kind of settlement, because both sides, you know, thought they could gain the advantage and press it home.
In terms of what Africa does for Africa, I mean, you mentioned the African Union and the difficulty they are in because they're literally headquartered in Addis Ababa. But are there any powerful voices in the African continent who would intervene, if you like, unilaterally or even with a few neighbouring countries as allies, just to instruct Ethiopia, you know, if you want to do business with us, if you want us to treat you as you want to be treated as a sovereign state and so on, sort this out?
Well, there is growing concern. For example, Kenya to the south has a border with Ethiopia and is seeing a spillover of people fleeing from conflict over its border. You have early on in the conflict, President Kagame of Rwanda expressed his concern and said that he really thought it did need, you know, international attention. He wasn't sure that Africa itself could sort it. On the other hand, to be fair, the African Union has sent in the former Nigerian president, President Obasanjo, who's very well respected in Africa. And he managed to go up to the Tigrayan capital and speak to the Tigrayan leaders in November. And he said he thought he could see the basis for a compromise, but it's very difficult to get people to stop fighting and focus on, well, what is the way ahead? And at the moment, you wouldn't say you see fruits of his mission. Now, the elders, and Ireland's Mary Robinson, of course, leads the elders group of former states people these days. They have called for African leaders to get much more involved in behind backing President Obasanjo's efforts. They say they would like to see Africa sort this itself, but it would need the continent to come together and really bang heads together in Ethiopia.
Finally, is there something else at stake here? I mean, it's all very well to talk about racial hatred and name-calling and all of the other atrocities being committed, but is there something at stake? You know, are there minerals at stake? Is there wealth at stake? Is there another agenda that we're not seeing?
Well, Ethiopia, to the best of my knowledge, isn't a richly endowed country with those sorts of resources. But it is, as you say, it's a huge population and country, you know, second biggest in you've got Egypt, you've got Nigeria, you've got Ethiopia. These are the huge countries on the continent. And it's landlocked, so it's, you know, it's bordered by Sudan and Djibouti and Somalia and Kenya. So when it blows, it has spillover effects in the Horn of Africa, and an unstable Ethiopia will destabilize others. Already there's obviously conflict with Sudan, which has had some spillover of Tigrayan refugees, and there's disputed territory there. So everything can unwind quite nastily. And it is in the interest of the region that parties get around the negotiating table and stop firing at each other.
Well, it's a situation that perhaps Ireland, as a member of the Security Council, might have a role to play in maybe twisting some arms. I'm not sure how Russia, China, the United States are involved in any of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ireland's definitely got a role. And one of Ireland's strongest areas of advocacy that I've noticed over the years is against hunger, because, you know, in the 19th century, Ireland experienced very, very severe hunger, experienced famine. So it knows what hunger's like, and it has taken up this cause over the years. So it definitely has a voice and is playing a role in trying to get the Security Council to move. But you put your finger on it. There's great power politics here. The US under the Biden administration has been quite engaged, and Secretary Blinken's been to the region himself, and they have a special envoy there. But, you know, a government like the Ethiopian one does tend to get some, some protection from other players on the Security Council, which makes it hard to get a sensible decision out of them.
Finally, on a different matter entirely, Helen, looking to the country over which you had presided as Prime Minister, New Zealand, are you happy with how the COVID situation has been handled on an ongoing basis?
Well, I just count myself very fortunate to be a New Zealander and living here with one of the best managed responses to the pandemic in the world. And I mean, if I just did a comparison with Ireland, and of course we're in a different situation. You know, we're not on the edge of Europe and we don't have a land border. My latest figures I've seen is that Ireland's total cases are 574,000. New Zealand's total cases are 11,895, which is 2% of the Irish load. Now, we have the same population as Ireland. We're both around 5 million. On deaths, 44 people have died in New Zealand, 5,707 in Ireland. Our death rate is 0.7% of yours. So, you know, I'm very happy to be here. Now, of course, people grizzle and moan, and, you know, the border is, you know, has been in effect closed to everyone except returning New Zealanders, and they've had to sit in quarantine for a couple of weeks, and no one likes that. But hey, you know, our people are alive, and I'm very grateful to be one of them.
On that note, Helen Clark, former Prime Minister of New Zealand, former head of the UN Developmental Programme, thank you very much for joining us.